Welcome to another edition of Kansas Policy Institute podcast. This is Paul Sutar, your host. Today we're talking with Steve Anderson. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Paul. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. Now, Steve, you're in an interesting position to be able to talk about the budget situation in Kansas. You are a practicing CPA. You are the managing partner of a firm in Edmond, Oklahoma. But more importantly, you were the budget director for Governor Brownback when he first came into office for 3 years. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. This first four budgets the governor put out, I was the budget director for, including the one we walked in the middle of the first fiscal year.
Okay. Now, I think it's really important for readers to learn some stuff that they're just not getting from the media, and that is some of the things that people just don't know about the budget, like the money that's never talked about, kind of what I guess I would refer to as some of the low-hanging fruit that people just ignore. Give me just a quick rundown of what's out there.
Well, first let me give you a little historical perspective. When we walked in, we had a $500 million budget shortfall, according to the media, which is less than currently is being forecast by those same media scribes. It's interesting when you look at the full revenues to the state, and this is what the taxpayer never sees, is there was in FY 2012, which is the last year that I have full records, there was $8.3 billion off the top before we even started appropriations. Now, that's money that went to special interest tax credits, to an exemptions and deductions, and various other sales tax exemptions. And these are special interest giveaways and things that have been passed over the course of the years that we've never seen the media say anything about. And it's 50 years of tax policy where we've watched Kansas continue to shrink in population and in economic prosperity. So you could argue that the tax cut that's in current place is much smaller than the $8.3 billion. In fact, I think the impact at maximum is $1.2 billion at full impact.
Okay. Now, there's money out there to be had, both in, as if I understand correctly, the writings that you've done recently and things I've heard you say, there's money out there to be had in funds that are kind of scraped off the top, but they're really not gone. They're still in the pot, but as far as a line in the budget, they disappear, even though the money's still there. Tell me about that.
Well, and that's interesting. People don't see what we call dedicated and directed. The largest dedicated and directed, of course, is Department of Transportation. And I think every time you talk about Department of Transportation, people think, oh, well, you're going to limit highway projects if you take some of that money. Let me bring a little historical perspective to that. The fiscal year that closed before Governor Brownback took office and I became budget director ended with a negative balance in the state coffers of $27.4 million. But yet, if you look over in the Department of Transportation, there was over $300 million in their ending balance. And largely what has happened, the Department of Transportation over decades has become the kind of go-to place for various governors. And what we've done is take too much money off the top, put it over there, and they basically do what we call in the oilfield rat hole. They store that money, and then when they need to use it, they dip into it. Governors always have in the past and probably will going forward as long as that much is taken off the top. In fact, we've advocated taking some of that money out of that ending balance and putting it over it back in the coffers for the state taxpayer to have the benefit of instead of being buried in an ending balance for KDOT.
Now, we have the same sort of situation with our education system, with our K-12 schools, with what's called unencumbered funds. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what they mean for the potential for the budget? That's actually being addressed with the proposal that's before the legislature right now, is it not?
Yes, certainly. And there's the unencumbered fund balance has been a kind of a thorn in my side from the time I became budget director there. K-12 is probably the most glaring example, although higher ed has significant ending balances also. But that's money that we appropriate to them for a 12-month period, but they don't spend in those 12 months. In fact, in many cases, we find they have a running ending balance. In other words, they didn't need that money that we appropriated to them. And it simply sets in coffers unspent, especially since we have needs right now. This is the perfect opportunity to close, as I would say, you know, in layman's terms, close those bank accounts, spend that money in the current year, and from now on, let's move forward. When we give an appropriation for 12 months, it's for 12 months. We're going to appropriate to you again in 12 months. In fact, I had that exact conversation with one of the presidents of one of our flagship universities, and I think they were somewhat surprised, but after we had talked to it, they understood, we appropriate to you for 12 months. We don't give you extra money, and I think the taxpayer would rather that money be spent in the classroom than sit in a bank account.
Right. Well, and then there's also another sort of a pot of money, money that's given away to various interests that the general taxpayer just doesn't even have access to. And you've written about that recently as well.
Yeah, that's the off the tops that I mentioned before, that $8.3 billion. And I would encourage, the list is so lengthy that I would encourage the listener to go to the KPI blog and read the blog and go through the detail. I think it will stun the average taxpayer to realize that we have an appropriation just in the neighborhood of $6 billion, but $8.3 billion in FY 2012 didn't even make it to the coffers before appropriation started. I think that's a bit of an eye-opener for people, and that's a pool certainly that we could go to. And as you go through the list, you'll find there's tax credits there that weren't used last year. We should close those immediately so they aren't used in the future.
And that's not uncommon, isn't it, that there's an appropriation made each year, sometimes even external to the budgeting process, that we know going in that money is not going to be tapped. That money is just going to sit there.
Yes, absolutely. That it is how the system has worked. Right? And as my grandfather once told me, who was a legislator in Kansas in the 70s, the single most outstanding attribute is government is its resistance to change. And certainly, once they get in a pattern of behavior and it hasn't been changed, no one's forced them to change it, it will reoccur year after year after year until they're forced to change.
Okay, so let's talk about just a minute what this is doing to us right now and then what the potential is in Kansas. And right now it sounds like we have money squirreled away in places that we don't have access to, real money that either could be put back into the budget line or used to backfill where there are holes that isn't happening. And what's that do to the entire process right now?
Well, certainly it gives us an ability to bridge through the next fiscal year. And I think when we look at what happened to us, which was the capital gains bubble, raised expectations too high for revenue. And that's really when I talk to people and they say shortfall, what they don't realize, it was a missed consensus revenue estimate. It wasn't truly a shortfall. In fact, when the tax cut was passed, our revenues are now actually higher than what we projected at the time. So what this would allow us to do is buy some time, another year through that capital gains bubble, which is probably going to have a 4 or 5 year impact, and we're the third year into it. So we should now start to see some leveling off. And we always knew when that tax cut was signed, those of us that sat around the table with the governor knew that it was 2 to 5 years before we started to see the economic rebound from putting that money back in the economy, back in taxpayers' pockets.
Well, and also because of the sort of the structural deficit that the Brownback administration inherited from his predecessors, and you started with a hole, and that hole, if you wanted to be honest about budgeting, which wasn't necessarily a hallmark of preceding administration, you really had to take care of that as well. So in some ways, you were filling in a hole and then trying to build something on top of it at the same time.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, we didn't realize how big the hole was until we got an end. Part of it, if you look at the predecessor administration, they were indicted by the Securities Exchange Commission for fraudulent financials. And we saw some of the same behavior when we took a look at the internal documents, that $27.4 million negative ending balance was actually quite higher because there was a $700 million certificate of indebtedness that the state issued in order to float ourselves through that cash flow period. There's a lot of things that are fairly sophisticated that have occurred over the last 50 years where basically government has found a way to hide the money from the average citizen. Right. In fact, they hide it from the media too because it's complicated enough. The average journalist can't follow it.
Right. I understand from my time in covering those issues, it is very complicated. And when I first discovered the school unencumbered balances in 2009, it was purely by accident. I just happened to be looking at some financial reporting from KSDE, and saw a report and called somebody up and said, hey, can I get some past years of this? And they said, well, do you want just these few funds or do you want the whole thing? And I thought, wow, whole thing, sure, give me that. And we discovered a transposition error in the Excel file that showed that literally no one was aware of the totality of the amount of money that was sitting in those unencumbered funds. So I absolutely agree with you. It's a very complicated situation. It's hard for anybody to follow. I would assume that your experience, even as budget director and having the education and access that you had, it was really an uphill battle, I would assume, to sort all that out.
Oh, it was certainly an eye-opener. You know, no one person can know everything. And certainly government accounting isn't designed to show you everything. And when one budget closes, nobody looks back to see the historical. And it's no surprise you find something like the unencumbered funds. And I think if we would go completely through government, look at every agency, starting at the city, county level and working up through state and federal government, the amount that sits unused in bank accounts that are drawing low interest, in some cases no interest because you can't draw money on federal funds that are held at the state and local level, we would be amazed at the amount of waste.
Well, and that's an interesting point you just make too. The federal government does not allow lesser governments to earn interest off of federal money not spent. Actually, it's a pretty wise thing, I think, because then that ensures they're not putting money in rat holes, that it's actually getting spent. But we don't do that at the state level because there's a budget line in school budgets where they make money off of investing that, and there's even a state government agency that takes care of the investing for them.
And certainly we've almost created an incentive for them to rat hole and sandbag that money and then earn the interest off of it. Certainly there was no punishment for it. And I think it's interesting, I just heard the current budget director, who, by the way, I have a huge degree of respect for and I think is just starting to really understand things. He says there's only 6 school districts that are not sitting on unencumbered funds in some account. And I think that's pretty amazing when you consider how many we have in the state.
Well, and it's also one of the things I encountered in reporting on that issue is some school districts do it what I would say the right way. They try to be responsible with the funds. They try to spend them appropriately. They don't try to access funds well in excess of what they need. I mean, they try to be good stewards of the public trust. But those districts, when they don't have those large balances, can be held at a disadvantage if the legislature is not very careful about how to deal with that issue. And so that gives them even an incentive to, you know, game the system so that they don't get hurt when things get sorted out. It's a very complex situation. What do you think the legislature could or should do to help citizens better access and understand this whole situation?
Well, I think one thing, and I think this is actually happening on the federal level, and I'm happy to say that I'm trying to keep my fingers in that pie, is we're trying to get the Governmental Accounting Standard Boards, who puts out the rules for how accounting should be done. And by the way, the state of Kansas has had a history of violating GASB. That's part of that fraudulent financial from 2008 with Governor Sebelius. But we've cleaned that up since, I might add. The state got a very good audit, the last audit. But we're trying to get now GASB to push, that's a Governmental Accounting Standard Board acronym, to push for a more transparent financial. So the taxpayer sees, just as they would in the private sector, here's the total revenue that came in. Here's the refunds, discounts, and giveaways we've done before the money hits the appropriation process. And I think once the taxpayer sees that in a transparent and open way, just reporting income correctly, I think would totally change the taxpayer's view of what goes on in Topeka and how much actually makes it into the appropriation process.
Yeah, I think it's the analogy I like to use is if my neighbor comes to me and says, hey, I'd like to repair our shared fence. How about you throw some money in toward it? And I do that, and you know he's going to take care of it. And then I find out later he didn't use that money for the fence at all. He told me it was more than it was going to be, and he used that to buy himself a barbecue grill or put it in his bank account. I'd be right in not being very happy about that, and I think most people would be. But yet that's what government at so many levels does to us. They insist on higher taxes for money that they don't use, that they squirrel away, and it's just not right.
Well, and that's certainly. And as of the conversation I had with a certain chancellor, that we appropriate you money for 12 months. If you don't need that much, let us know. We'll give you less. And certainly therein lies the rub, which you just pointed out. those that mislead and build up unencumbered funds have built up their own cushion, so to speak. And so we've incentivized that behavior. And I think that's one of the great things KPI has done, and particularly yourself, in bringing that into the light of day. Because there weren't many of us that understood that there was money sitting in accounts. And I think we've just hit the tip of the iceberg. If we go to higher ed next, we're going to find a lot of money. And as we start our work, our way through agencies, there is cash to bridge our way through. And certainly, there are a lot of efficiencies to be had. Better services at a better price is available. Government's one of the few places that hasn't been able to do that because they haven't been forced. In the private sector, competition forces you to do that. Here, you've got to be forced by the legislature in acting in the budget. And certainly, the legislators have trouble acting without support from the citizens. And that's why it's so important that they try to understand exactly what's going on in Topeka, and why I'm working so hard at the federal level to try to bring those GASB pronouncements down so that we can start to get a more transparent and open budgeting process. And certainly, I think that there's another issue here, that is that a budget is often not something that really falls in line with regular accounting practices. Certainly, they talk in terms of 1 year's budget. You look at the $1.5 billion bond issue that they're discussing for CAPERS right now. How much of that will you see in the budget? All you see is the savings. You don't see the payments because the payments don't start until the next budget cycle. So a budgetary cycle that creates debt doesn't show that debt as part of that budgetary cycle. It's not till you make the payments. And it leads to a little bit of game playing on it. And this happens across the country at the federal, state, local level.
Well, sure. It happens at lots of levels. I can think of one that is particularly topical is when a school district decides to hire additional staff, they automatically then incur retirement costs for those people. But those are not shown on the budget. The state just absorbs that. And at some point, the piper's due is due. And where does that come from? Well, and one of the things that's caused Kansas trouble in the past is they haven't accounted for that in the past. Those what's the accounting term for those costs? That's
unfunded actuarial accrued liabilities.
There you go. Fancy name for stuff that you're going to owe, but you're not talking about.
And that we now are paying, my last year's budget director is $402 million. That came. There's another off the top that could have been in the classroom. Instead, we're paying for the sins of the past. In the 1970s, the teacher's retirement system issues at each one of the school districts was brought into the state, and the state picked up the liability. When it came in, it was only 17% funded, and I think that's something citizens need to be aware of. The school districts acted irresponsibly, dumped it on the taxpayers, and are letting the taxpayers now pick up the hook for that. And as I pointed out to a group of legislators I talked to today, that this $402 million sure could have been better spent in the classroom. And I think all of us would like to see teachers paid better, and good teachers paid better. And certainly the money's there to do it. But when it's benefit load, which provides absolutely nothing in current operations, I think the taxpayer's been shorted.
Absolutely. So just as kind of a summary, between the money that's rat-holed, as you put it, the money that's in unencumbered pots, the money that's off the budget, is there enough to make up the difference with what Kansas needs to come up with to cover this shortfall because of the tax cuts?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. We always knew that. The only reason there's even a shortfall now is because there was a consensus revenue error. And I think that's the thing we need to keep going back to, is if the average citizen were to look at the revenue flows and the things that we've done, they would go, well, you know, there really isn't that big of a shortfall. In fact, you look to our south, Oklahoma has a $300 million shortfall with no tax cut. There is plenty of funds to make up for this. The question is, are we able to battle the special interests that currently have control of that fund? And that is always the question in Topeka. A lot of these entities have powerful lobbyists. They're very persuasive. And once a tax credit or exemption or deduction has been created, it's very hard to close that loophole. Certainly, though, one of the great things about a budget crisis from the perspective of fiscal conservatives, it creates opportunity. Because as I pointed out, my grandfather's quote, that single most outstanding attribute of government, that resistance to change, they have to change. when the funding isn't there for them. And that's one of the beauties of a budget shortfall.
Well, and I hope between that and increasing public awareness of these things through your efforts and the efforts of KPI and others, maybe we can get some citizens aware enough and maybe even riled up enough to get their legislators to actually stand up and say, no, we're going to fix this. This is the citizens' money, not your money.
And I think if the average citizen knew what was going on and then compared how their taxpayer dollars are used in finances into Topeka to how they run their personal finances, they would understand the tremendous amount of opportunity that's there if the state just had the same fiscal responsibility that the average citizen has.
Amen to that. Well, thank you, Steve. It's good to meet you again. It's good to talk about these issues. If any of our listeners would like more information, there are plenty of articles on Kansas Policy Institute's website and blog. You get there by going to kansaspolicy.org.